as the world is still coping with lockdowns and I'm still seeking refuge at the beach, there have been a number of exciting discoveries made recently in the field of archaeology, which I'll be covering in the next several videos, starting with the excavations in southern Egypt of what has been called a lost golden city. Over 3,000 years old, archaeologists have spent the last 7 months unearthing what Dr. Zahi Hawass calls the most important discovery in Egypt since King Tut's tomb. The ruins of this ancient city in Luxor, located on the east bank of the Nile River, around 500 kilometers south of the capital, Cairo, is known as Aten, which is the name of the sun god, and dates back to the reign of Amenhotep III, the ninth king of the 18th dynasty, who ruled Egypt from 1391 until 1353 BC.
We believe that this golden lost city is the most important discovery after the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun. I call it golden because it was found in the golden age of Egypt, 1391 BC. I called it lost city because it was lost. No one really believed that the city could exist here. Three main districts. One area for storage. We found a big area for the storage of meat, making sandals, also sewing clothing, precious stones for making necklaces and bracelets. Pottery tell us about the relation of Egypt with the New Kingdom. But the most important thing are the statuettes of Queen Ti, the wife of Amenhotep III. We are thinking that in the west side of this city, we are going to find evidence about Tutankhamun. We think that this is the beginning of the discovery.
It is said that King Amenhotep III ruled for nearly four decades, and after that, the city continued to be used by Tutankhamun. Amenhotep III's reign is known for its opulence and grandeur of its monuments, including the Colossal of Menmon, two massive stone statues near Luxor that represent him and his wife. His kingdom stretched from Euphrates in West Asia to modern-day Sudan. Before I talk about the lost golden city itself, let us take a look at King Amenhotep III, whose mummy is not in the best condition after 3,300 years, but here's a depiction of his face at the Louvre Museum in Paris, and here's a statue profile from Thebes, and another one of Amenhotep III and Queen Ti. Ti was married to Amenhotep III by the second year of his reign, and she was the daughter of Yuya and Tuya, whose mummies are in a good state of preservation, with their blondish hair strikingly visible. Of course, there are many people who are quick to point out that hair can lighten as a part of the embalming process, which is generally true, but when one looks at the facial bone structure, from the lack of prognathism, which means how far the mouth sticks out from the face, and other features, like the large prominent high-bridged nose, the ethnic or racial ancestry of these mummies is clear, and they are absolutely not sub-Saharan African. That said, Queen Ti's mummy was verified by DNA and is also remarkably well-preserved, as is her red hair, which again, regardless of color, is not sub-Saharan African in form and texture, and her Caucasian ancestry is clear, despite the overwhelming amount of Afrocentric propaganda and cultural appropriation one finds online these days. Queen Ti was the mother of Akhenaten and grandmother of Tutankhamun. Akhenaten is one of the most important pharaohs of Egypt, usually accredited with being the first monotheist, meaning he altered Egyptian religion to focus on the worship of a single deity, the sun god Aten. He was also famous for being the husband of arguably one of the most beautiful women in history, Queen Nefertiti, whose bust is famously housed in Berlin and admired by millions of tourists each year. The 18th dynasty is considered a golden era for ancient Egypt, and an inscription found inside of the lost city says that it was called the Dazzling Aten, also referred to as the New Kingdom It was during this dynasty that Hatshepsut ruled for about 21 years, considered the longest reigning female pharaoh of an indigenous dynasty. Even if she was only the second historically confirmed female pharaoh, she was part of an impeccable royal bloodline. Hatshepsut re-established the trade networks that had been disrupted during the Hyksos occupation of Egypt during the second intermediate period, thereby building the wealth of the 18th dynasty. The word Hyksos means rulers of foreign lands, and they were the ones that introduced the horse, chariot, and bronze medals to the continent of Africa. If one were to look the term up, a typical definition might say that they were a people of mixed Semitic and Asian descent who invaded Egypt and settled in the Nile Delta. Keep in mind that Semitic is a language group, not a race. The word comes from Sem, or Shem, one of the sons of Noah, who, according to the Bible, settled on Mount Ararat of the Caucasus mountain range, where we get the term Caucasian from. This is also the region where the horse was first domesticated or disseminated from during the Holocene. So the Hyksos dynasty was not sub-Saharan African either. They were Caucasian, and to those that want to argue that Semitic is not Caucasian, as they were a people of the Levant, I would like to point out that many of what people interpret as races are very modern and the result of relatively recent mixing. If we examine the DNA results of ancient remains across the Middle East, we find that the demographics were quite different than we see today. Whether it be published studies concerning waves of ancient fair-skinned, blue-eyed people migrating into what is now Israel 6,500 years ago from present-day Iran and Turkey. Mount Ararat, incidentally, and the Caucasus Mountains are in present-day Turkey. Other examples are the first DNA sequencing of people biblically known as the Philistines, where we get the modern word for Palestine from, and their DNA indicated that they shared genetic affinities with Anatolian and Iranian-related populations up until the Bronze Age, which resembled modern-day Europeans with fair hair and eyes. This is also the case with populations we call Phoenicians, which is a Greek term for red and not what they called themselves, but their genetic ancestry is also similar to that of modern Europeans. The point I'm making is that the demographics from ancient times, in almost all cases, does not reflect the modern demographics, whether it be North Africa, Egypt, the Middle East, Iran, India, and even China, whose 4,000-year-old mummies also have Caucasian features, blonde and red hair, complete with swastikas. Even Ethiopia was comprised of a different ruling demographic in antiquity, which is no longer reflected in the modern population. The people that disseminated the horse, chariot, medals, cattle, farming, and Indo-European languages during the Holocene called themselves, according to ancient cuneiform and texts, Aryans, and their religious philosophy, although an oversimplification, could be considered sun worship. Which brings us back to ancient Egypt and the dazzling lost city of gold, or the Aten.
We did announce today the discovery of the largest city ever found in Egypt. It's called the Dazzling Aten, dated to the reign of Amenhotep III, 1391 BC. This is a large city. It's not only as a settlement, but also administrative industrial area. Because in this storage of meat, dried meat, dated back to the third festival of Amenhotep III, an area for making shoes, an area for sowing cloth, as well as the production of mud brick for the temples and the palaces for Head of the Third. This city gives us lots of important information about the life of the ancient Egyptian during the time of the Golden Age. That city was lost. Egyptologists never thought that will be discovered. But this excavation is really proving for the first time that we still have to do more and more excavation to be able to find out the limit of this large settlement or large city of the dazzling atom.
While the city is called Golden after the Golden Age of Egypt, there weren't any golden artifacts found there yet, to my knowledge. So it's not like an Egyptian El Dorado, but more of a metaphorical golden city. In an alchemical context, the element of gold is associated with the sun, so in that respect, the name is also fitting. While the ancient sun-worshipping cults absolutely did revere the giant, bright star in the sky, paying close attention to its passage, cycles, and influence on the seasons and the length of the day, the ancient religion was also largely symbolic, in that it was not just the physical object we call the sun that they worship, but the light that it represents, and can also be symbolically represented by a flame. Alchemy is not merely the changing of lead into gold, but it's an investigation into the mysteries of birth, death, and resurrection, which is perfectly represented by the cyclical behavior of celestial bodies in the heavens. It's for this reason that astrotheology is not just the worship of stars and planets, but involves a deeper correlation to how the celestial cycles reflect on the spiritual life of man himself. In Hermetic thought, the movements of the planets hold a metaphorical value as symbols of the mind of the All, or God. Through understanding the natural world, including the operation of the stars, or the influence that astrology has upon life on Earth, wisdom is gained when we know what these influences are and how to deal with them. Ultimately, it's through a deeper understanding of the natural cycles that ancient civilizations, including the Egyptians, practiced what we would consider magic, involving trance-like altered states, and ritual sex, with the ultimate goal of which is to become united with higher counterparts, whether we call them demons, angels, or gods, allegedly leading to the attainment of divine consciousness. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon, as well as through various other major book outlets. They make a great gift. If you'd like to support my work, you could do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description section for those that are interested. I appreciate it. Thank you. Please hit the like button and subscribe for future updates. As always, I look forward to reading your comments, so please leave me your thoughts below. Please have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.